Sports Career Podcast, episode 364, How to Pursue a Career in Athlete Management. Sports Achiever, and welcome to another episode of the Sports Grid Podcast. I'm your host, Ed Bowers. As always, my goal each week is to provide you a special guest who's an expert in a particular sector in the sports industry, especially if you have an interest with regards to athlete management and representation. I hope today's episode can support your sports career development, interests, and needs. Now, getting back to today's podcast, special guest is Ben Pilby, who is the Director of Talent at Think Beyond, where he has over 10 years of experience working with elite athletes such as Michael Johnson, Will Greenwood, Baroness Tenny Gray Thompson, Cole Frampton, and many more, where he works with them with regards to their post-career support and also during their career development as well as an elite athlete. For that reason, it's such a pleasure to have Ben as a podcast special guest on the show, where he will share his sports career journey and explain to you how to pursue a career in athlete management. So have a listen and enjoy. Ben, it's such a joy to have you on the Sports Career Podcast. Please do share to listeners your sports career journey. When did it all start?
Thanks, Ed. It's good to be here. Where did my career journey start? So in a slightly unconventional route. I'm from a farming background. Grew up on a farm my whole life. Parents still run a farm. And the natural kind of route was to go to agricultural college. with the, you know, the view of kind of either become, you know, moving into agriculture or land management or property, but it became quite apparent that my passions led elsewhere, and so I then looked to try and pursue a career in working in sport. Sport's been the centre of my life from ever since I can remember. Always been incredibly intrigued by the athletes, the business of sport, and kind of the stats and what make people tick and why certain sponsors were sponsoring what. You know, even from even as a teenager, I was kind of quite curious about that. So it kind of made sense that actually let's try and pursue something that I'm sort of remotely quite interested in. So after I left agricultural college, I just went hell for leather to try and get as many internships as I possibly could in an area, because it was, you know, I suppose coming from that background, the first thing people see on a CV is that I'm in a completely different, from a completely different kind of background, possibly to a lot of maybe the traditional route of, you know, I know a lot of people don't tend to go into the, I suppose, the career that they study, but I was very aware that I kind of needed to get a little bit more experience. So I just hammered as many emails and doors as I possibly could. And I got a couple of internships with a couple of agencies and brands. And then I then was very lucky to then get an entry-level job at a marketing agency called Cara Sponsorship, which are now MKTG. So a global kind of sports media agency. And I I was there for a few years, working across multiple different kind of accounts. I then left there, and then I'm now at the business. I've moved to the business I am now, which I've been, well, will be 10 years this year, I believe. So, you know, it's been quite a while. So yeah, I've been at Benchmark, which is the parent company of Think Beyond, the kind of the company that I work with. So yeah, that's kind of my journey. So maybe the slightly if there is a traditional route in getting into sport, I'm not sure, but a slightly different route, that's for sure.
Well, we're going to dig deeper, because I'm going to give somebody a little secret. I've had the privilege when I was interning at Benchmark, and I was learning from Ben. So, but before we talk about your 10 years at, you know, Think Beyond, but also Benchmark as the bigger company, Just going back, because I know there's going to be students listening to this, and everybody always has that question, how do I break into that, in, you know, into the industry? Looking back when you were doing those interns, can you remember what skill sets you would develop? And I'll share mine working with you in a second, but I would love to hear you going back in time thinking there were certain skills that, looking back, really supported me where I am now, but also making, let's say, that good first impression. I'm just curious of those little things of the soft skills, how they supported you right at the beginning when you were developing them.
I was always told that getting into the sports industry was incredibly difficult, and I think it still is. So I just tried to kind of be as decent a bloke as I possibly could, and not you know, turn up on time. I'm a stickler for punctuality anyway, and just turn up on time, be enthusiastic, and just, you know, do everything that's asked of you, really. I think was just try and learn, and just try and impress as sort of basic life skills rather than the specific knowledge, because the knowledge will, you know, just come as you go through. But I think it was just trying to be a decent bloke, and I've tried to kind of have that throughout, you know, the last kind of, what was it, 13 years or so of kind of working in space, really. So I hope to think that's kind of one of the reasons why I kind of how I've got to where I've got to.
And also, just quickly, I'll share my experience really quick, but how important is building the trust? Because you transitioned from agency work to now athlete management. Can you remember those early stages when you had to build rapport with, okay, these mega stars in their sport, but from your side, it's just being a good person and having those manners in place to build the trust, you know, on that side of things?
Yeah, the trust element, working with individuals who have a significant kind of profile, and there's reputations on stake, if, you know, at stake, if, and there's a lot of private information that you are very privy to, which obviously not many people, they don't want people to know. So there's obviously, of course, from a trust perspective. And I suppose the thing for me was, I was just trying to, and this is what we do as a business now, is like, we try to provide expert kind of advice and guidance where possible. And I think that was where it was building up the trust that we kind of knew what we were doing and what we were talking about. So I think as well as the confidentiality of kind of that, it's also the trust of kind of knowing that the individual, the athlete who's working with us, understands that we are the best people at what we do, and for that marries up with their objectives and their long-term kind of view on where they want to be and how they want to be. So yeah, of course it's hugely important, but I think there's a various different kind of elements to trust that, because you can be an incredibly trusted individual and, you know, not going to share any information, but I think you need to be more than that when you're working in with high level individual. You've got to be able to offer some advice and guidance, and in a not just a mentoring role, but kind of in various different ways.
Cool. I'm going to share my experience, because honestly, when Ben reached out to come on the pod, which I did try getting many years ago, but it's like anything, it's about timing. No joke, everybody. When I was at Benchmark, and Nick Keller gave me the opportunity, which I'm grateful for, because it opened up my eyes when I went from Durham to Benchmark. And it was quite cool, because when I was in the office, I think it was Soho at the time, you had all the different departments. So when I was working, it was more about the sport industry awards. But then on the other side, where it was Lisa and Ben, I was always curious of what they were doing. And the one thing I've learned, everybody, is observing and learning from people in an office environment where you can literally build your soft skills, be helpful. That was my goal when I was there working with you, is like, how can I be helpful with Ben? Even if I had no experience, he's spot on, you can develop the skills. Could we talk on that, of with all the different offices you've worked, how your skill sets have developed with the different people you worked at Benchmark over the 10 years? Because I learned so much just by observing. I just want to hear on that side of things. And I'm grateful for your guidance, Ben. You know, I've said that many times. I really mean it. I wouldn't be here without the guidance of those conversations we had. Like you said, for me, it's 9 years ago I was with you guys just on an internship. So, but I just want to dig deep, because I just want to give people behind the scenes in an office environment. You can learn so much by putting yourself out there in an office environment, I mean.
Every office environment is different. I think I've been quite fortunate that when I worked at CARA, now at MKTG, and now within, I suppose, the Benchmark family of companies is I worked in offices where there was multiple different departments. So whether it was kind of in at Cara where you had the media planning and buying, you had like the sports stuff, you kind of had creative agencies, and you and with Benchmark we've got obviously Think Beyond, and then you've got the Tribe World, which runs the Square Mile Relay. You've got Beyond Sport. We've got a as you mentioned, the Sport Industry Group. We've got an esports business, National Student Esports. So I think you'd be silly almost not to kind of embrace the different areas of the industry for you to learn, and the contacts that you're able to make as a result of that, not just immediately with your colleagues, but through I've been very fortunate to work across actually a number of the different Benchmark businesses in different capacities. And yeah, of course your breadth of what you learn across those is certainly heightened. And it's kind of, and I know we were going to probably go on to one of the learnings at the end, but one of my kind of top tips is if you can get, some people do have a very like direct line of kind of the industry or the kind of role that they want. But for just personally, from my experience, going into an environment that gives you such a breadth of opportunities, and then you can work out what you don't like and where you want to pursue, etc.
100%. Now, before we talk about your actual role and going in depth on that topic, I'm going to put you on the spot though. 10 years at Benchmark, like what have been some of the highlights, but also from a personal development standpoint, you've learned the most from that experience so far?
Oh, blimey. Look, there's been lots of positives to, you get to work with some amazing individuals, right? And you get to see them up close and personal. And as a failed athlete myself, I suppose we're all failed athletes, aren't we, really? But reasonable level of kind of sport, but I never was able to kind of really kick on. And I suppose the next best thing is to try and be as close to someone as possible who's doing that. And so yeah, you get to work with some amazing people. So, and I've, we have had some amazing experiences of going to different parts of the world, seeing these guys in action. And so I wouldn't say there's one specific like thing that has kind of really stood out for me. Yeah, again, it's quite cliche, but the environment that I work in on a daily basis is pretty amazing, really. Some of the individuals you mentioned, Nick earlier on, like Nick's a really is a great kind of mentor for me, and has been a great leader for me, certainly over the last kind of decade or so. But yeah, there's nothing that stands out. Well, there's plenty of kind of individual kind of sporting highlights, I suppose. But I don't, there's Carl Frampton winning kind of his two weight, becoming a two weight world champion in New York, which was an amazing kind of experience to be part of. But I think as a overall highlight, I think it's just being able to be kind of in an industry that I'm very passionate about. I genuinely can't do anything else. I'm not very good at anything else, so or have any genuine interest in anything else. I'm switch off pretty quickly if I'm able to do any. Anyone starts talking to me about politics, I'm switch off incredibly quickly, or anything else for that matter. So yeah, it's I think it's just highlight being in the industry, really.
And let's go straight to today's podcast topic. How would you define your role with regards to not what you're currently doing, but with regards to athlete management? I know you've just mentioned it's about guidance and supporting your clients' needs very briefly, but just for the listeners, could you actually describe what your actual role is from a fundamental standpoint if they want to work in it, but also an understanding standpoint as well?
Yeah, sure. I suppose maybe take one step back and kind of explain who we are as a business, I suppose, which then I can then go into what my role is within that. So Think Beyond is a social impact and sustainability consultancy that kind of supports and works with like rights holders, organizations and brands, and leaders who want to have an impact in the world in some way, shape, or form. And they all have passions that they kind of want to kind of pursue. And we believe we're kind of experts within that field. And I think our client list across not just the athlete side, which we kind of cover within leaders, but across some of the brands, like the North Face and Bloomberg and Disney and ESPN, and then with the rights holder side and teams with like Liverpool and Cell GP and World Rugby and there's plenty others as well. So, but yeah, with the so where I fall kind of within that, like I said, there's sort of three buckets: leaders, teams, and brands. And leaders, so the purpose, we've kind of evolved a little bit in recent times where we've kind of moving away from the kind of the word of talent and kind of it's moved towards purposeful leaders. So it's individuals who, as I say, want to kind of want to have an imp or want to sort of generate and have an impact in the world in areas they care about. And again, that kind of then falls into sort of three areas, which is we have the longer term management stuff. So the you know the clients that we have like on a longer term basis. So as you know, it's like sort of Michael Johnson and Carl Frampton and Tally Gray Thompson and Kate Richardson Walsh, Molly Thompson Smith. There's lots. You know, we have a good plethora of kind of individual people that we support. We then have the second bucket, which kind of falls a bit more into the one-off kind of strategy support. So if an individual that we don't manage on a longer term basis wants to kind of have an impact, but they don't know how, we can bring our expertise within that as a sort of a one-off type workshop-led offering, which then gets developed, and we can then work with them on a longer term strategy and then help them actually I suppose do that as well, whether it's a community program or a foundation or you know a curriculum, whatever it might be. We can then see that from the start point all the way through to kind of the delivery, and we've done that through with a couple of people in the US as well, and we're starting to kind of roll that out in the UK. And then the last sort of group, the bit is the groups. So working with teams and organizations on doing a bit more of an introduction to social impact and how their athletes can use their platform in the right way. Because we've done a lot of research in this space that people want to do more, but they don't know how to. So as experts in that field, we can do a bit of a session on that that gives them that kind of overview. And then if people want to take that further, we can do that. So I kind of oversee those three buckets. Traditionally, like in the past sort of, I suppose, certainly 9 years, about a year ago, we introduced these other two new pillars. But previously to that, I was very much on the kind of the direct athlete management, kind of supporting. And I suppose depending on the individual, they all have different kind of objectives, and they all want to sort of try to achieve different things. And so our role is to try and help them do that, whether it's commercially driven or not. You know, we try to kind of help them and shape their narrative in that area that they want to support. And then we then try to help them, yes, generally have an impact, but then also commercialize that at the same time. So, and that's kind of how, you know, so and obviously as part of that, you know, we're working on a day-to-day basis to secure these opportunities and put them in the positions that can talk about that. So as I mentioned earlier, we can be anything from a kind of maybe your more traditional agent, which you might see as negotiation, you know, commercial deals, through to kind of a bit more of a mentoring side as well. And but yeah, so that's maybe a very top line synopsis of kind of what we do as a business, and then how we work with kind of leaders in the world of sport.
Can we decode this a bit with a case study? Is that all right? You're right, we're getting a bit nitty gritty. It gives me so many great questions, but I think I'd like to use a case study. And honestly, is when I was at Benchmark, I think you just started with him. We've already mentioned him, or Carl Frampton. Can we use Carl Frampton as an example of what you've just said with the three pillars? Because what I'm going to share a story I saw on Twitter where he announced his retirement. And one of the tweets, he really said, "Thank you for the great work you were doing." And I literally just went, boom, this is just really great to see that you got recognition. And I think it's really great to see from an industry standpoint. But working backwards, like, could you just share the whole journey, if you can, to your best ability, of like when you're working with him during when he was a boxer, and then that pivotal moment when he knew he was going to think about, you know, hanging up the gloves to then be that purposeful leader. I think he's a fantastic broadcaster in the boxing world. I really like listening to him, what he shares. But I just think he's just a great case study relating to what you've just said from the three pillars. So the mic's yours. No pressure.
So, yeah, Carl, we've worked with Carl for what I think the best part of now 10 years. And you know, we identified him as an amazing individual that had such a kind of close connection with his community in Belfast and Northern Ireland due to kind of his kind of personality. He's a genuinely just a really decent bloke. Obviously an amazing fighter and was fighting on a global scale. I think he'd just become world champion in 2015 when we just started working with him. But it was kind of what he stood for in Northern Ireland that we kind of which was really appealing for us as an organization and what we do. Given the political kind of history within Northern Ireland and how he kind of sat within that and you know how individuals sort of saw him as a beacon of kind of the new Northern Ireland and he'll never kind of want to necessarily have that kind of thing over the top of him, but he's like that. If I can change the way that people kind of interact and see opportunity within this country, that he's happy to do that. You know, he's a huge supporter of integrated education, because believe it or not, you still have segregated education within Northern Ireland, so between Protestant and Catholic kind of schools. So he is an ambassador for that. So the real grounding, I suppose, the fundamental blocks of a good person were there. It just so happened that he was also an exceptional fighter as well, and one of the best sportsmen to have ever come out of Northern Ireland. So the foundations were there. We had built a really close relationship with him, and I suppose through that journey, it was very apparent that where he wanted to be in sort of 10, 15, 20 years time, and we're still nowhere near kind of I think where he wants to what he wants to achieve. But you know, you mentioned the media thing. Like he's one of the very few boxers that can articulate clearly and honestly and on the TV. So it was very evident that was going to be a route that he wanted to go down. And so we worked quite, you know, over the years of putting in positions to be able to talk about the sport, whether that's on the radio or whether it's on the TV or whether that's written, just sort of slowly putting in positions to talk about the sport that he loves. And it, you know, he's grown into that role. And, you know, as you say, you know, at the start with, it was kind of just doing the odd one here and there. And then he's now gone on to obviously be a longer term contract with TNT Sports. But what was quite interesting about Carl is he kind of understood that he needed to do stuff alongside his career that would know that he would benefit from it in the long run. So, and he knew that he would, you know, to do one-off type piece of media work, you don't get paid a huge amount. So you knew you had to kind of do it first if you know you wanted to benefit, you know. So where a lot of athletes might not be prepared to kind of put in the kind of the work and effort to do it. So so from a media standpoint, kind of, you know, we kind of, that was certainly going to be an area that he kind of wanted to pursue. And I think he realized that as you mentioned, kind of, when athletes finish their career, sometimes a lot of them haven't thought about what they're going to do, or you know. So we knew that a good few years ahead of probably where it was going to be. So we were able to kind of get ahead of the game, and we're very fortunate. A lot of people that we work with probably have a similar type of mindset as well. So which makes my job significantly easier when you've got the buy-in from the individual. And then hopefully that they see the benefit when that time comes to hang up the gloves or whatever, or boots or whatever it might be. So
can I dig deep on this? Can I dig deep on that point? So I've interviewed quite a lot of athletes on here, and it always saddens me that what's next is the big question after their career. And I hope this can help athletes in what I'm about to say. From working with Carl and some of the other clients, would you know a certain number of years beforehand that made that transition smoother? You said a couple of years. So would you say that 3-year period's a good buffer looking ahead and putting in that planning work in place? I hope, don't mind me sharing this. It just saddens me when they do retire, they've got no plan, and then they go through a dark path. So I know it's a, how long's a Peter Street? It's difficult, I know, but.
Yeah, it's different. It's difficult because, you know, some individuals and athletes are in sports which are incredibly intense, which requires traveling all around the world and having the time to think about what's next and is you know is difficult. And I suppose with Carr, we just drip fed ideas and concepts and things, you know, and ultimately it kind of, whilst we can push it as much as we can, it does need to come from the individual itself as well. And yeah, it's but I do, and whenever I speak to young people and young athletes, I just try to, you know, whilst it's not a prerequisite of being an athlete, if some people just don't know and they're so dedicated to their sport, but I just try to get people to kind of look at other things that they can do alongside, whether that is photography or learning, doing a degree, or you know, just doing, you know, doing something else, which personally, you would probably I would like to do, supplement soon and helps your kind of on field performance, because we know careers are short. So anything that you can, any string to your bow that you can add, then will do you no harm ultimately.
To be honest, I'm going to give a real life example because I know you've worked with her as well. When I had the privilege of having Baroness Tenny Gray Thompson, she got into studying politics because people were bored of what she was doing in her training regime, being an athlete. So they gave her another, as you say, another string to her bow, which then she's been a flagship from a political standpoint in disability sport and raising the awareness there, which it was such an amazing conversation experience. But And also Dr. Frank Dick, you said that as well when he worked with his athletes having other interests. So athletes, I hope that was helpful. I'm going to bring it back to the brands really briefly. If brands are listening in, from your role perspective, it's great to build trust with, of course, your clients, but building relationships with brands must be an important factor from the business side in the work you do.
Yeah, of course. Like a large part of I suppose my job and the role is to try and provide opportunities for individuals to look. There's a fun. Sometimes it's just a fundamental need to have commercial support from partners, right? So to be able to continue to do what you can do your sport. But yeah, you know, there is a commercial element to what I do, and so there is a large responsibility of building up a network of contacts and people that we can speak to try and bring them on board as to be part of an individual's journey. Not all brands and will be suited to that end of that sport or that individual's kind of beliefs or passions and things like that. So and that, this just comes with experience. You understand who do you need to speak to. But this sort of comes back to this sort of whole thing around kind of establishing yourself a little bit more than what you just do on your sport, because we're in a society now where the power and the voice of the athlete is grown, and you know the influence is so much there. You know, athletes are now more trusted than
Yeah,
politicians.
like Rashford,
By
you know, as an example.
yeah. And Rashford's a great example, and there are plenty other great examples of individuals who've used their kind of position to be able to raise or address certain issues, whether it's D&I or sustainable climate change or domestic abuse or whatever it might be. And you know, those individuals who are genuinely authentic about kind of these issues and who have had I suppose a life experience in that particular issue are kind of a real good ambassadors to support a brand's kind of campaign or values and ethics, etc. So yeah, gone are the days where you just sponsor the most famous athlete. Really, well, I suppose it still happens, but it is certainly not as much as it used to be. You know, people want authentic connection, and this is where, you know, we say is that if we can work with individuals that have something else that are generally relatable individuals, you'll generally be more commercially viable. So, and this is where these kind of workshops and one-off strategy elements come into play, because look, athletes are commercially driven generally at the end of the day, unless you're the real higher echelons of kind of, you know, the football world or you know other really high-paid sports. But you know, anyone that can know that if they can be a bit more commercially attractive, then you know, I my view, why wouldn't you look at kind of other areas that make you more appealing as well? So
So, in a nutshell, just to reframe, this is what you define as the purposeful leader when working with these athletes, when it's their role is on a bigger course, but with that commercial standpoint, it's that win-win-win scenario. Is that correct?
I would say so. And look, the not everyone, you know, we're now expecting 17, 18, 19-year-olds to be the beacon of, you know, looking at the issues around the world. You know, and some, you know, I've spoken to loads of people and they're like, all I want to do is focus on my sport. And you get it, right? Some people are come to that, I suppose, understanding of kind of what they can do potentially a bit later on in life. And that's absolutely fine. It's just some people kind of are kind of at different stages of that kind of understanding. So, but yes, it's, I think you're right in that point there.
Can we do another case study? Because we've got Carl Frampton, who, you know, I knew straight away from a boxing standpoint, but I would like to bring on Molly Thompson-Smith because this isn't like a well-known sport. Like, she's a rock climber, but also when I did some research on her, she's a four-time national champion. And I just want to highlight that, you know, sports that aren't in the, you know, let's say football in the UK perspective or rugby or, you know, all these sports we know, but rock climbing as an example, there is still aspects where there is purposeful leaders, commercial opportunities. And I'd love to hear your thoughts by working Molly, because I find this one quite fascinating as a case study example, you working with her from a different perspective.
Yeah, Molly's amazing. We first met her when I think she was either 18 or 19, and she was part of the Sky Sports scholarship program that actually another one of our clients, Will Greenwood, was a kind of a mentor of. So we were kind of connected with it, in, you know, we were closely connected to it, and we saw Molly as, you know, she, you know, climbing had just been, I think, given the opportunity to be in the Tokyo Games. So Molly was given the opportunity to be part of this program to help sort of supplement the kind of training and the expense that comes with trying to kind of become a sport in the Olympics. And yeah, so we sat down with her and her dad, and we were just immediately struck with what an amazing young woman she was, and how she, you know, she's just started sort of explaining how she wanted to, about her, how she got into climbing, and you know, when she was younger, she had no one that looked like her within the world of climbing for her to kind of aspire to be. So she took her kind of, she would look up at the likes of Jess Ennis Hill and Kelly Holmes, etc. So, but this 19-year-old was standing in front of her going that, you know, she wanted to use her kind of own experiences to try and increase the BAME representation within climbing. And as well as, and there was also this element around kind of trying to show that strength and femininity can be expressed sort of simultaneously as a result of that. So, which we were like very quiet, you know, very quietly spoken, but we're like, there's something here. And, you know, when you've got a sport that's in the Olympics as well, you kind of start, the pieces start falling together, and you start going, do you know what, this could be, we could really support her, and I think this could be a great opportunity for her. So that was kind of the building blocks of that. And so basically what we have done over the last, I don't know, I can't remember when we started working with her, but certainly over the last sort of 6 years, is 5 or 6 years, is just help her kind of position her into that, those types of spaces. She has worked incredibly hard herself on how she communicates that externally, whether that's through her own social media or in kind of more traditional media channels, where writing columns and things like that. So we were kind of able to put her in the odd position to be able to kind of talk about these, which has then meant that commercially, we were in a good position to then go out and speak to kind of quite, you know, leading brands about her. And, you know, she's an incredibly articulate individual. She's authentic in everything that she talks about. She's just a really good person, and brands just love that opportunity. So, you know, over the course of those last few years, she's worked with some, you know, some pretty major global brands, and is actually now in a, you know, one of the very few people in the sport of climbing that is, you know, he's doing well within, from a commercial standpoint. So it's, because as you say, as a sport, and then maybe a non-traditional kind of sport, you know, the earning potential in terms of kind of tournaments and things like that is not there, certainly in this country anyway, and on the European circuit. So yeah, we just helped her and supported her in an area that she was incredibly passionate about, that enables her to continue to do what she does on the wall, and on the rock in the summers, in sort of the off season. She can go and do what she does, goes and becomes the best athlete that she can be, and we then try to support her in the other areas. So, and actually to that, her requirement aspect, what we do with her at the moment is different to maybe what we do with a Michael Johnson or a Tanny Gray Thompson, because they're in different stages of their career, where Molly needs a bit more of a hands-on type support, because she's like just sort all the commercial stuff out, whereas because she needs to focus on her kind of becoming the best athlete, whereas other people, other sort of maybe a bit more older individuals don't have necessarily the same kind of hot support that they do. So it's all different.
Ben, from an athlete management standpoint, I need to ask this. How do you manage your time with regards to all the different clients you work with? Because this is a really important point. I know your work is not a 9-to-5 gig, and I need to emphasize that. So how, and we talked about time before this podcast chat, but with regards to your role and the different clients who are on different career journeys themselves, depending where they are, how do you adapt in your workflow when you adapt with your clients?
I've had to learn, as you said, that there isn't no one size fits all. It's not a 9-to-5. It's you are working sometimes at not necessarily hours, but it's kind of a bit kind of sometimes you're having to do phone calls in the evenings or over weekends, or something comes up that you need a couple of hours to kind of go and sort. So I think, yeah, it's and as a result of that, things do, you speak to my wife, sometimes there are kind of heated discussions about that. But it's creating a balance that kind of works with your family and I suppose the clients, as long as you can kind of feel comfortable in the work that you're doing, and you're doing that, you everything that you sort of feel like you're saying that you're going to do, and you keep that conversation and communication is one of those things that I think is incredibly underrated, and being able to keep that kind of regular communication with individuals that's not kind of over the top. So I've kind of maybe contradicted myself a little bit there, but kind of communication is in important, but it needs to be the right communication. It's not just sort of keeping them, keep it like every day you need to have a chat with them. I think sometimes that's not needed. So you just no, the time management thing is something I've learned certainly in the last few years around kind of having a baby, a child. Is it's you've got to kind of manage it, how it works with your life. And there were, in the early days, you kind of as enthusiastic young people do, you just do as much as you can, and which I'm in a way I'm still slightly an advocate for. If you got the opportunity to get involved in an industry you're passionate about, to go, get stuck in, show that you care, do everything you can to kind of be successful at that younger age. And then you'll then start to work out how that works within your own kind of structures, days, as you get older and have other kind of thing, other commitments you've got to kind of factor in. But
100%. I'm
yeah.
grateful for that reply because I think it's important if people want to go into this role. And at least my final point with the role standpoint, because you said this to me on our WhatsApp call, and I think it's important for me to highlight. And certainly when I worked with you, social media has grown to bigger leaps of a personal brand standpoint. With the guy, you said to me on the call, Ed, I just like to be behind the scenes, not getting the limelight, and making sure I work my clients and serve their needs. So my question is, how do you find the balance of being behind the scenes, doing a great job, but also, having that versus the credibility of the role? Because I'll be honest, when I have people on my show, I do my due diligence, do my research. I knew you already, but in this world of social media, of how agents are perceived, the credibility thing's the hardest part now. Beforehand, there was no credibility because there's no personal brand, but now it's to the point in the other extreme. So I just really would love your thoughts on that side of things of representing athletes.
It's a really interesting point. I think it's something that I suppose I battle with, because you want to try to stay true to you as an individual, and And yeah, as you rightly said, I think for me, it's the credibility fundamentally comes with the work that you do, right? And the credibility comes through the athletes that you work with, they're working with you for a reason. So it's kind of like that should be enough. It's the credibility of the relationships that you have with your contacts, and which again is fine. And so I'm always still very much on the verge of like what your opinion, what your kind of the credibility you have between your peers and the people that you work with, like that personally, like is kind of enough for me. But you're right in the sense that in this kind of era of around personal brand development and being put in positions that are a bit more kind of external, I suppose, in terms of kind of doing things like this, or being regularly posting on whether it's social media or LinkedIn, or being on panels and things like that. I think there is a bit more, I suppose, certainly from a there are a lot more agents and athletes and people that work within talent who are maybe kind of who are being more present on these platforms. So it for me, it's kind of do you kind of got to, I say there's a fine balance between it and not necessarily if you're talking about it on social media or LinkedIn, sometimes gives off the opinion that maybe you're maybe being more successful than you are. So do you know what I mean? It's kind of that kind of my natural instinct is to kind of just let the clients and the work that we do, talk for itself. But we are now in a different world where you could possibly pick up clients or opportunities by telling people what you do and how you go about it. Because, and this is, we're incredibly passionate about what we do, is Think Beyond as a business, and we know a lot of other people are as well. So actually us talking a bit more about it is that, there potentially could be ways of kind of partnering or collaborating and things like that. So I think there's merits in both, but my natural instinct is certainly to kind of just let the people do the talking for themselves.
100%, and it goes back full circle. When I saw that tweet from Kyle Frampton and you were acknowledged, I was like, boom, like it just says it all. Like, your client is actually doing the testimonial of the great work you've been doing with him. But I've got one personal question, because you know what I'm about to say, because when I joined Benchmark, and I know that was Michael Johnson, your associate, I was like, wow. So when I joined, every no jokes, I've got one the book here, but I bought all the clients' books. I think Richard Hill, Will Greenwood, Tanny Gray, all of them. But the first ever self-development book was Michael Johnson, Slaying the Dragon. And you can mention other clients, I'm curious, but what learning lessons have you learned from them, from their sports, have rubbed off to you? But particularly Michael, when I read his book, and I was doing it whilst at Benchmark, about self-discipline, turning up early, having a plan. I was literally applying his book when I was in the offices at Benchmark, and trying to just get in his mindset of the attitude you need if it's in sport or in business. So, if you don't mind, I'd love your thoughts of what you've learned working with him and how certain components of his character has rubbed off to you.
Yeah, I've just realised that I'm actually wearing a Michael Johnson performance top. So, when you asked that question. So, yeah, Michael's a, it's quite an interesting one, because I remember the days when in Atlanta in '96, and then certainly in Sydney in 2000, when he was literally one of a global phenomenon and a global superstar. So, when I first started, kind of like, I think we as a business, we'd literally only just been working with him for maybe just under a year, I think, when I started. So it was all quite fresh for a lot of us. But yeah, look, he's one of the probably few people that I've worked with who kind of are very reflective. They're almost the same as probably what they are, they would have been in on the track and the training, and in terms of the dedication and the detail and the of how that's translated into his kind of, I suppose, post-career kind of activity, that's across his media work or in speaking work, or he does a variety of other different things as well. So he's one of the few people that kind of, it's so when you speak to him, he's incredibly detailed about kind of what he wants to achieve, what he wants to gain from things. There's a very key plan in what he wants to achieve, and you know, which helps me significantly because I know where we are, and know, you know, what when opportunities present themselves or we seek opportunities, if it's not quite right, there's no point in putting it in front of him. So, but yeah, Carrie, you know, carries a huge aura around him, and you know, I remember when we started me speaking to him on a regular basis, it was a bit like, oh my God, this is Michael Johnson. But it's but I think also, you know, Michael has, as I say, has this kind of aura around performance, and you know, I don't think he ever won a silver or bronze medal at a major championship, so it kind of that sort of says it for itself. But Michael is also he's an incredibly funny guy. He's very relaxed, certainly a bit more in his older years now. Yeah, so there are a lot of other opportunities you can do with him. But yeah, as I say, he's one of the few people that I've really learnt a huge amount in terms of like prioritization and detail, making sure stuff is kind of the best it can be before kind of presenting it, and which has then led me to obviously try and improve the way that we work with across not just the management clients, but across others as well. But yeah, no, Michael's great, absolutely great.
I'm grateful for that. That's on a personal note, everybody. So that was a bonus question because for me, like you said, when I was in the offices, it was just so cool to be around that vibe with all the other clients as well. But out of interest, Ben, like looking back, what have you really enjoyed from your sports career journey, except that you didn't work on a farm at the end of it? So what have you enjoyed the most?
I think I probably sort of mentioned this earlier on. It's just I couldn't see myself doing anything else. Whilst I have interests, certainly outside of sport, in terms of which probably more towards my kind of farming roots, I suppose. I do a lot of stuff kind of in and around that, but building and various other stuff. But I can't see myself doing anything from a profession standpoint. It's kind of ingrained in me, and so yeah, that's probably what I've enjoyed. It's just being involved in massive sporting events, working with sporting individuals, brands that do some really cool stuff. It's just look, don't get me wrong, it's, you know, there are days and weeks that are incredibly tough, like any industry, and you do come home going like, why am I doing this? But it's but I think that's it would be strange for that not to happen. But the majority of, you know, the what we do, and ha you know, and I suppose there's an element of, without being kind of all what's the right word, like we do some really, like we have a some of the individuals and the work that we do has a huge impact on people and communities, and we can take a huge amount of kind of pride in what we do, you know, and that's fundamentally kind of at the heart of what we do. Like we're trying to do some really, really good stuff, that has sort of real world tangible impact on people's lives, and the people that we work with and the brands and the companies that do that just generally really, really care. So, and it's so that's kind of one of the, I suppose, the great things about working, certainly the business and the industry that I work in.
Amazing. Look, I hope all the listeners have enjoyed this conversation. But Ben, I always finish with an inspirational question. And feel free to recap what I'm about to say with regards to this question, but I think it's really important. What three tips would you give to the listener who wants to pursue a career in athlete management? Like, what are those three top tips be?
I don't know if I can give you three, but I certainly one that comes off the top of my head, which was, you know, I think, well, maybe two. Like, if you're, I wouldn't necessarily aim for going straight into athlete management, because there are not many. There's very rarely any jobs that come off the back of it. You know, you're only gonna you tend to it tends to be through people who you know, or you know, the odd opportunity comes up. But my general tip would be, like, just don't narrow your lens in kind of to work in a specific job. Like, sometimes, yeah, you work hard, you graft enough, you'll get there. But certainly within my world, which, you know, is the role of what you do and the responsibility you have to an individual, is requires you to have a real broad understanding of kind of the industry. So whether that's around kind of just how sponsorship activation works, and kind of the what brand what brands, you know, what decisions are made for brands to sponsor certain organizations or do certain partnerships, you know, the creative process that they go through, kind of, you know, how, what kind of, when a deal gets signed, what activation elements of that, you know, PR, experiential kind of, you know, the media buying side, how that all works. So there are plenty ways to get within the world of marketing and sport, and then you then will find your way possibly of then get, if athletes is the world, you know, the way that you want to kind of lead, there will be organizations that you can go to and approach and say, look, I've done this and this. This is what I can bring to the table, and try and get as br a breadth of experience before directly going into athlete management, because then you'll then have something to be able to offer around the commercial development of individuals, or you know how, because sometimes you get in positions where you're advising them from a business standpoint as well. So if you've got the ability to kind of pull on expertise within that, then you know you'll certainly stand out as well. So that's two, I think. And I go back to the first point is like just, you know, just try and be a decent person and listen, just try and be a decent guy, and you'll go places if you're enthusiastic and you're willing to get stuck in ultimately.
Well, I like to say I'm a sort of project or an outcome of that, Ben, from my experience working with you. So honestly, everybody, I hope you take notes on those points, because from my experience when I was with Ben for 3 months, I learned a lot. And some of the things he's mentioned there, certainly with how you show up, I was always early. I made sure of it. But these little things.
I don't want that to be like the title of the podcast, by the way. It's
No,
just
it don't. No, but it's important. I'm trying to tell the listeners that you can learn from others with the opportunities you have, and being a good person is a great starting point of your values, and certainly with your mannerism as well. So really apply them. Ben's spot on, because I've experienced it. And how can people interact with you? Where can they go with regards to Think Beyond? Like, where are the best places to go from a online perspective?
probably just from a LinkedIn side of things at the moment. You probably Think Beyond is we're starting to sort of probably showcase a little bit more of the work that we're doing and winning. You know, I'll be on there. You connect through LinkedIn to me, happy to kind of field any kind of questions or that's on the back list. But yeah, we have a website, thinkbeyondtalent.com as well. We have this sort of the normal social channels as well, but yeah, they're probably the main ones.
That is great. To all the listeners listening, all those links will be on the website with regards to this amazing podcast chat. Ben, it's been a joy chatting with you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ed. Really enjoyed it.
What a really enjoyable podcast chat with Ben. And on a personal note, it was such a joy to have him on the show. Like I said in the podcast, very early on, he was one influencer with regards to my career development to where I am now. Also, Lisa, Nick Keller, I want to say thank you again for the opportunity nearly 10 years ago, because when you start a career in sport, it can be extremely lonely, certainly when you're just trying to get your foot in the door. And when I was in that working environment at Benchmark, it really opened up my eyes of what's out there. But you've got to take advantage of the working environment and ask many questions. And I asked many questions to Ben relating to the work he was doing with the amazing talent and clients he was working with. But with regards to that point, the one thing that hit home to me, which is really important to highlight, if you want to work with elite athletes from an athlete management standpoint, is you've got to understand the lifestyle you're going to go into. Like Ben said, it's about your time management, but most importantly, being on the other end of the phone and taking that call to either get a deal over the line or, most importantly, support your client when it's most needed. And I think that's a really important point with this point too, is the trust element. Building trust is vital. And when you have those two components, you're honestly halfway there in making this career a reality. It's just being a good human being, which Ben touched on. If you focus on your qualities as a human being, it's more likely you're going to build that authentic trust with those clients who, in the sports world, they're on that pedestal, but what they need is a real support system where they can help them thick and thin, not just during the highs of their career, but also during the, you know, the adversity or lows, whatever that circumstance or situation is. So for me, I'm really grateful for Ben giving the behind the scenes of working athlete management. And if you want to work in this area, I really do hope you put one learning lesson from this podcast relating to your sports career development now and make it happen. Now, as always, at the end of each podcast episode, I'd like to finish with an inspirational quote from my guest speaker. Ben said, focus on just being a great person in the sports industry and build a wide range of experience, which will support you in pursuing a career in athlete management.